Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. This is episode 233 of this distinguished podcast. We're recording on June 5th for your reference, and we've got a couple weeks to go off of because we were off week and we're a little bit short. We were off last week and we're a little bit shorthanded this week. I'm Bart Logan, and we'll do a quick roll call. Joining us, we've also got Ralph Schudel, who's doing double duty. He's going to be commenting and also working the boards. Ralph, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Sam trusted me with the keys, and I'm going to try not to put the show into a ditch.
All right. Pray for us, everyone. And also joining us, we've got Alex Stanek. Alex, how's it going?
Not too bad. I've been on the show for years, and Sam still doesn't trust me with everything, as he shouldn't do. I mean, it would be a huge mistake. We would end up not recording anything and wasting our entire night, so... You made the right call.
Yeah, that is probably good. Sam, of course, is in Egypt right now. We're all pretty jealous of him. And then Patrick Murphy, he just doesn't really like us anymore. I think he's just a bandwagon crew. I guess not a fan because, you know, obviously you guys are reporters and that's distinct from being a fan. But he's, no. Smurf has some good excuse, I'm sure. We do have a lot to talk about. We were, again, off last week, so fortunately there was nothing that happened between that and the last one except a certain colossal loss to Toronto FC, who got to capture the Trillium Cup, and it was quite disappointing for all. So we will touch on that very briefly, and we'll look at a crew bounce back victory last Wednesday at Maffrey Stadium over the defending MLS Cup champ Seattle Sounders. Break down what went right in that game, something that we haven't been able to do a lot of and won't get to do a lot of in the remainder of the show, because we've also got to recap last Saturday's loss to the Colorado Rapids. Prying defeat out of the jaws of victory out there in Colorado. We'll look at what Greg Berhalter's decisions in both of those games and ask how they've impacted those results. We'll maybe just delve in a little bit to what this team really looks like now under Greg Berhalter and whether he is the person that we think is best equipped to lead this team to continue to success. We'll talk a little bit about some of the other big names that haven't been producing maybe at the level that you'd like to see for Columbus. One of those being Jonathan Mensa, the designated player at center back, didn't even get the start Saturday against Colorado. We'll take that, take a look at that. We will also preview the upcoming game. Next Crew FC game on June 17th, still some time away, as well as maybe touch on the upcoming U.S. Open Cup match, although I think we'll break that down a little bit more next week. And hey, anything else that tickles our fancy, if you'd like to join the conversation, it's too late, but you can send us a tweeter or a Twitter on the Twitter machines using the hashtag MRPod, and we'll get to it next week. Hit that us up at the @MassiveReport handle. But first off, I'm going to hand it over to Ralph Schudel to perform a very, very quick autopsy on that Toronto game and then move us over maybe to that victory against Seattle that we can bask in for a few minutes.
Friday night, Toronto at BMO Field. It happened. That's all you need to know.
It happened, and it was not good. 5-0 shellacking at the hands of Toronto FC. Maybe a low point, I think we all hope, at least, for this Crew FC season.
I agree with that. And, you know, with these guys, you see it right out of the first 5 minutes. Toussaint Ricketts, who was the hero of Game 2 of the Trillium Cup, beats Jonathan Mensah handily. Mensa with the turnstile defense, basically just inviting Ricketts into the 18-yard box and then takes him down to earn a yellow card, which many were debating whether it should have been a red card or not. And, you know, for Crew SC, they really just got punched in the first 5 minutes. And you can't really come back from that, you know, because it's like Rocky. You know, if Rocky took a haymaker at the start of the movie would be over. There'd be nothing to talk about anymore. But, you know, and this team, as we'll talk later on the show, is so roller coaster up and down, and it's a roller coaster of emotions. They, you know, it's still really tough to get a beat on them.
It certainly is, and again, we don't want to beat this dead horse too much longer because Toronto did plenty of beating already. But one of the biggest red flags for me in that game was the two goals conceded after you went up a man. Toronto getting a red card in, I believe, the 80th minute, and Crew SC already down 3-0, but up a man. Responded with by conceding two additional goals, and boy, it just looked at that point that the team, just the players, the personnel, were just not engaged in that game. And I don't know if either of you want to comment on that, or it's something that we can probably will touch on in the greater discussion. But if either of you have a final thought about that massacre in Toronto, feel free, speak it now or forever hold your peace.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about it, but I think the most concerning thing to me is the way we lost, not the fact that we lost. If we had gone there and lost 2-0, I would have not been that concerned, but the manner by which we lost that game was deeply concerning to me, and it seems to kind of lend itself to this idea that maybe we are a mentally weak team. We basically fell apart after that first goal. I mean, the team was okay prior to that, even though it was really early in the match, but then after that, they never seemed to have their composure. They never seemed to have the game plan still in their mind. They were not all on the same page. And even when they went down a man, nothing changed. I mean, or when they went up a man, nothing changed. It was the exact same thing. They might have been still playing with 11. I mean, they might as well have been still with 11 men. And it's really concerning. And I think we're going to talk about this later in the Colorado game as well. But there seems to be a little bit of mental weakness in this team, or a little bit of self-doubt, or whatever you want to call it. But this team does not have the kind of mental stability to turn things around, it seems like. I was not shocked when they had the red card and then conceded two more goals. I really wasn't. I didn't expect it to turn around after that red card, and it didn't. It stayed exactly the same. And I don't know who you put that on. Maybe you put that on the coaching staff. Maybe you put that on the players, but I think that's something that Greg needs to take a hard look at. And if he can't solve it, it's going to be a problem, because we have a couple more losses like that and he's going to be out of a job.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because our distinguished leader, Patrick Goldan, tweeted, you know, it's Trap, you know, tactics and everything for that match. I mean, Trap was not meant to be the only defender shielding the back line. I mean, it was not good, and I don't know what Greg was thinking, taking Justin off in the 30th minute or 38th minute, whatever it was. I've tried to block most of that game out of my mind, but, you know, the tactics were all wrong, and it's like the only player that gave a crap about what was going on was Artur when he came on, you know, and he had, you know, a great game. He seemed to be the only one that was ready to go for action. I mean, you'll see, as we'll talk about Colorado too, Artur came on, you know, unfortunately when it was maybe too little too late, but, you know, it, I don't know. We'll touch on it. I don't want to get too far ahead.
Yeah. Don't want to get too far ahead and don't want to, again, dwell on that too much, but, certainly a low point for the Crew SC so far this season, dropping the Terrillium Cup. Not that we're that concerned about it. It's less disappointed about Crew SC losing out as you are about Toronto winning anything, even something as trivial and arbitrary as the Trillium Cup. But for as much of an emotional low is that game against Toronto, you saw the Crew SC rebound this past Wednesday at Mapfre Stadium against the defending MLS Cup champ Seattle Sounders. Now, granted, they were short a couple of their top players, Clint Dempsey notably out of the lineup, of course Chad Marshall not in the lineup, but Columbus Crew, you know, it's not that Toronto wasn't missing some of their top guns too, and they managed to concede 5 goals. So you go out there anytime and able to get a big 3-0 win, and that game could have been more, couldn't it have, guys? I mean, you look at the chance that Ola Kamara had early that went off the post, and it was for everyone, a guy like Justin Meerum who got pulled off early in that game against Toronto. If Greg Berhalter was trying to send a message to Justin, it sounded like that was heard loud and clear. He has a goal and an assist. Zach Steffen rebounds with a terrific performance in net. Even Jonathan Mensah, who was probably the scapegoat, deserves a fair amount of blame for that loss in Toronto, was, I believe, the only returning starter on the back four for that game against Seattle. And he performed well as they kept the clean sheet against Seattle. Again, not a team that even scored a goal from the run of play or anything aside from PKs in the MLS Cup, so they're not necessarily a big goal scoring team, but nonetheless, whenever you can get a clean sheet in this league, it's something to be proud of, and in a great play display for Crew SC last Wednesday.
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance. Once again, I think Federico Higuain stole the show in a lot of ways. I thought he was phenomenal. When he's on, he can do amazing things for this club, and I really thought he had a good shift against Seattle. Justin Meerum, like you said, really bounced back. I thought he was phenomenal, and Ola Kamara had a great game as well. When those three players are on, we're going to score goals, and then the question becomes, can we defend? And I thought our defense did well. I think Artur being back was a big kind of boost for our defense. I'm still kind of on this theory that when Artur starts, we're going to do well, although we can talk about Colorado in a little bit. Artur played in that game, and it did not go well. And he played at Toronto, too, but by that point, I think it was kind of already over. But yeah, I think we had the defensive rigidity that we needed to have, plus we had a number of in-form attacking players who were just better than the Seattle team. And it led to a great result. But again, you know, this kind of inconsistency of form is concerning. But 3-0 against Seattle, I mean, you'll take that anytime.
Yeah, and I mean, against the defending champions, it's, you know, sure, they're out Dempsey, they're out Morris, they're out Marshall. But I mean, they still have Christian Roldan, who is a very dynamic young player that they've been kind of hanging their hats on. Nicholas Ladero, who took the league by storm when he came in after the dismissal of Ziggy Schmidt. And then Ozzy Alonso, who has kind of been all reliable. You know, he's just kind of that pesky player that can get under your skin. You don't like him if you play against him, but you love him if he's on your team. So I don't think anybody really should downplay this victory necessarily against Seattle. Seattle's still a really good team. They have Stephen Fry. You know, the fact that you're able to beat Stephen Fry three times is tremendous. Like you guys touched on there, we should have had more. I think, you know, at least there should have been 5 on the board. You know, that would have been nice to kind of atone for the sins of Friday night. You know, and to give guys proper shout-outs, I think Hector Jimenez had the absolute game of his life. He was very good on the right-hand side. Josh Williams had a slow start, but really was very... good, kind of settled in. You know, I have to check. I don't know if he's played with Mensah on the back line at all this year, because at that point, Crew SC used 10 different combinations in the 15 games of this year for some sort of backline defense. But, you know, I think Hector and Josh really had a nice game. And, you know, to see, I believe Finley started that game. To see Hector and Finley, you know, you could see their chemistry off the field really play on the field there, because I think that attack was considerably more dynamic than when you have the likes of Harris and Offal in there.
Well, and it was comforting to see, and you mentioned Jonathan Mensah, to see him bounce back, and I thought that was almost the case of, because you saw such a different look back line in that game against Seattle. I believe Jonathan was the only one who'd appeared in that Seattle game, the Toronto game, who also appeared in that Seattle, and you kind of saw that as, you know, maybe Greg Berhalter's challenge. I think a lot of people have been, or at least fans have been, you know, chiming in, especially with how well Alex Crenali, the rookie, has looked this season, or how well he's played, how good he's looked, that, you know, why are we going to, or why are they, you know, keeping going with Jonathan Mensah if he's struggling to adjust to MLS when Alex Crenali's been so strong? So I think that was maybe a challenge for Greg, sending Jonathan back out there saying, hey, you've got something to prove. Come here and prove it. And you look at what Crew SC did. I mean, outshooting Seattle 12-6 with five shots on target compared to three for the Sounders, outpossessing them, even though they were leading for most of the game. I mean, a strong, didn't even really give, you know, concede very good chances for Seattle. That Justin Miram goal was, you know, vintage J9, taking it, you know, basically from the midfield line on the left wing side, cutting pretty much all the way across the box before taking a big hit with that right foot. And it looked like a lot of the guys that maybe were challenged, that maybe Greg Berhalter challenged after that disappointing result against Toronto, came back to play.
Yeah, and it's funny because we talked to Greg after the game, asking him, there was one specific name that was left out of the 18, and that was Nikolai Ness, which I don't think he had a terrible game against Toronto. Actually, I think it was Jonathan, you know, as we were mentioning. We talked to Greg and we were saying, you know, what was the deal? Has his standing changed? And he said, you know, they wanted to sit Nico out because they weren't very pleased with his performance and necessarily how he was doing in training ever since the Toronto game. But also, too, that he's touched on a little bit was that they were very pleased with the depth that they have on the team, and they're almost experimenting more so with various formations to kind of match what they're doing tactically, which the guys were getting stuck in really tough positions last year where, you know, you had your Tyson Wall, Gaston Saro combination. Saro goes down, then you're inserting some different center back in there. I think Rodrigo Saravia played center back a couple times last year. But, you know, you get different players getting caught in different positions, you know, and Berhalter's in some really tough decision-making situations where he's got to decide who he's going to put in there, and then that puts more of a strain on people. But he's really liking the depth that he can have, where he can have, you know, Waylon Francis come in for Yuka Raitala, or Josh Williams come in for Ness, or Crenali come in for Mensah. You know, even if you get a Dilly Duca coming in, or Christian Ramirez, he's feeling really confident with, you know, any player that he can insert into the 18. He thinks that they can give them the best chance to win.
Absolutely, as you look at that, and you have seen, and even more so, I think, than in past seasons, Greg Berhalter's wears, I think, one of the, a fair critique for Greg has been his, again, you know, his trust in tactics and his system, and the idea that, you know, he wants to force, you know, dictate play by not really necessarily prepare for teams, because you're more concerned about how you're doing your game plan. and imposing your will on the team. But it seems like he's been a lot more apt to tinker. I mean, you look at three games over an 8-day span, and we see three pretty different lineups: a 4-4-2, a four the 4-2-3-1 that we've gotten used to seeing from him, and then this following Saturday in Toronto, five in the back or three in the back, however you want to really look at it. But again, showing Greg Berhalter's propensity for switching things up a little bit. And for much of the time against Colorado, it looked to be working well. It didn't look like necessarily a bad decision to have that kind of three in the back that can become five in the back if you want it, because you've got two traditional wing backs there flanking. And Crew FC had the lead going into the final 10 minutes.
I mean, it's tough from my perspective, and I'm sure Alex will touch on it here in a second, but to me, the team never really looked like they got out of the gates very well. You know, they almost seemed like they were planning on seeing a different side of Colorado that they game planned for, and it seemed like the press that Colorado threw at them initially really looked quite unexpected by the team, but to get that goal on a deflection, the soccer gods were definitely smiling on Crew SC because I felt like they lost their legs as the game progressed on.
Yeah, I mean, I was not super impressed by their performance either. I know I keep harping on this Arthur thing, but I really feel like our defensive mid and our midfield in general is really dysfunctional when Arthur is not in there. I thought once he came on, they improved slightly, but overall, it was just a poor performance. I mean, you did not see the energy levels like you said, Ralph. I mean, I just thought it was low intensity, and some of that might be the fact that, I mean, they are playing games back to back, but they did not put in a good performance against a very beatable team. And Colorado are the kind of team that you would expect Columbus to go there and at least get a point. And to be going in and again, I mean, we talked about this with the Toronto game. It's not so much the fact that they lost, but it's how they lost. To give up that lead the way they did, and to just kind of, in a 7-minute period of time, get killed by what I believe is a subpar team. It's depressing, and it doesn't make you feel very good about the direction the season's going. And hopefully, it's just a bad run of form, and they can turn it around, because you need to be able to hold off Colorado when you're going into the final 10 minutes of a match with the lead. You should be coming out of that with at least a point. But to concede two, again, like I talked about earlier, it makes you wonder about the kind of the mentality of this team and the mental state of this team, where they are in terms of thinking about themselves. And yeah, this week has given me a lot to think about. Usually I'm kind of, the Sunshine Brigade or whatever, but I don't know how I feel about all this. It's deeply, deeply concerning.
Allow me to play Sunshine Brigade for you, Alex. Come on off the ledge
Okay.
here. Let me pull you off a little bit here. You know, it's Colorado has been, me and Murph were getting into a discussion earlier in the week about it, that Colorado is actually quite unbeatable at home. And I'll explain here. This season, they boast a three, well, now it's a 4-2-1 record at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. But over the last four seasons, they've been 25-15-7. And against Crew SC, they are 12-4-5 at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. So, you know, Murph said something to the effect of, and I don't want to talk for him here, but this is what I'd imagine he would say if he was here with us, is, you know, they're very good at the game at home. You know, whether that's altitude, whether that's the support that they're getting in the stands. I'm not trying to minimize how bad Crew SC looked, because frankly, I think it's a little more deflating to me this loss. You know, when you have it in the bag and all you really have to do is just kind of get across the finish line, rather than getting thumped 5-0. Getting thumped 5-0, I can deal with. It's when you're losing a game, at the last second when you had victory just ever so close, you know, that is really tough to swallow.
I think not only that, but a conversation that we've been having for a while. It's one thing, you know, to lose. You can accept losses, but I'm looking at the standings right now, and again, there are only two other teams that only have one draw, Vancouver and the aforementioned Colorado Rapids, who are last place, and there's only Crew SC with 16 games has played more games than anyone in MLS. I do see Real Salt Lake also has 16 under their belt, but just 22 points in those, and you look at between that Colorado game, between the Toronto game earlier this season, between the NYCFC game, those are very big swings, and in two of those cases, not the most recent one, the Colorado game, those are games against Eastern Conference teams that you're going from getting 3 points to not even getting a single point, and it's you can't go through the season. You can't expect even if Crew SC, you know, went through the season. If you extrapolate this the rest of the way out, I'm not a big super duper math statistics guy, but I think it's going to be hard if you're literally just 500 and don't have any ties to be able to make it above the line. And while I think we're all sort of the same mindset, just get into the playoffs, baby, and then anything can happen. I've got some concerns about this team's ability to make the playoffs right now. When you look at all the teams that are below them, below that red line, have games in hand. They have better goal differentials, with the exception of DC United, Columbus is, and New York Red Bulls. Apologies there, but it's. You just worry about all these points that they're leaving on the table.
Well, we do have a lot of ties. So if we want to talk playoff math, I mean, they have a lot of losses, but they also have a lot of wins. They have very few ties. And so if we keep winning half of our games and losing half and not drawing, we're actually in a pretty good spot in terms of the playoffs, because MLS is a pretty ridiculous system for how the playoffs work. I mean, you have six teams that are going to make the playoffs, and you only have five that are going to miss out. So you have a better than 50% chance of making the playoffs. So if you're getting 3 points half the time, you're actually in okay shape. But I agree, it is concerning, and the form needs to turn around a little bit. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this team, and I think this is going to be the real test for me. When Artur is fully fit, and we don't have this constant necessary rotation because of multiple games in a single week, if this team can start to find its rhythm again like it had earlier in the season, I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be well clear of the danger zone, and we won't be worrying about it so much. But if these problems continue to persist once Artur is back, then I start to really wonder about whether or not this team is going to make the playoffs, and if they do make the playoffs, if they're going to go anywhere in the playoffs. Unfortunately, I feel like with what happened in MLS Cup, the expectations for this team are much higher than just making the playoffs. If we make the playoffs and then we get immediately knocked out, I'm still not sure the fan base is going to embrace this as a successful season. And I'm not sure they should either. But I think that we can safely get in if we can kind of recapture that form, and if Artur can kind of be reintegrated into the team in a positive way.
My one concern with that, and it's not so much about, you know, whether this team can be successful this season versus whether the club is well positioned to remain successful. If the impetus for success is relying on Artur Ohlone, that if he's as good as he seems to be, I think the chances of him remaining in Columbus are pretty slim.
Well, so in Major League Soccer now, there's a rule that you basically have to have a buyout clause inserted into a contract when you take a player on loan. So, and I believe they've confirmed that Artur does have a buyout clause. And so if he's as important as I think he is, and I think he's going to be throughout the season, I think it's an easy buy for this team. We were linked with a number of Brazilian players in the past. Zico was one, I think, or Zeca, or I don't know how you say, right. say his name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a player that we were linked with. And then later he was linked with PSG for something like a $20 million price tag, something crazy like that, 15 maybe. So we have really talented South American scouts who pick out great players. And so if they buy our tour thinking, okay, we have this buyout clause set, he's doing well for us now, and we have the potential to turn around and sell him in the future, I think there's no risk at all in that. I think you buy him 100% of the time. So I would not worry about that aspect of it.
You guys hit on some good points there with, I agree with you, Alex. I think you need to kind of play it like the real estate market a little bit, buy low, sell high, because Artur's nothing but 20 years old. I don't think he can legally drink in the States yet. But he's got great potential, and the team's got a completely different dynamic when he's on the field. And, he gives that team the zing. And I think I got a tremendous amount of respect for him on Wednesday night when I heard he was, tossing his dinner at halftime in the toilet, presumably in the locker room, and was late to come out. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go play soccer now, So it was, I've got tremendous respect for Artur and everything that he does. That's the reason I gave him my black kit name and number when I got that pressed on this year. But I digress. Guys, we're getting close to the midsummer swing, which we traditionally go on, where we go on an absolute tear. And I think, this year will be no different, because we're going to be playing teams that are kind of somewhat lacking, minus your Atlanta United. We get Montreal again. They're not really having the best, even though Jamali's looking okay. But they have like a 1-2-3 record on the road. But, we're getting to the midsummer swing where I think it'll be okay. To touch on the playoff point, I like the idea of just win and get in, essentially. I think 2015, guys, if you want to correct me on this, Portland was one of the wild cards, and that was how they got into the double post shootout with SKC, I believe, in the playoffs. But I don't mind getting in. I would like to be a higher seed. That way we get the bye the first round, and we get a little bit more rest for the guys. And then the U.S. Open Cup, outside of beating Cincinnati, I would love to beat Cincinnati. I would love to smoke them. But like you guys said, too, the sooner we can get focused on the MLS season and the match congestion gets alleviated, I think that bodes incredibly well for us. And then last one, and I can hear everybody unlocking their iPhones and getting ready to tweet at me, even though they won't hear this for a day or so. But, I attack the season very much with a business mentality. I think how I calculate improvement is how you do year over year. And Crew SC right now is at 22 points. They're sitting here, what are we at, 15, 16 matches played right now. They didn't get their seventh win until, I think I saw September or October of last year. So, we're already doing better than last year. Is it championship quality? Absolutely not. But, we're trending upwards again. So it's not all doom and gloom. It's some gloom, but a lot of positivity as well. But, I think the grass isn't, that bad. There's no reason really to get close to the ledge yet.
Well, kind of speaking of close to the ledge, I think there are a lot of Crew SC fans who are very, if not over, and the big there's been plenty. If you go on social media, especially, you always get it from a certain segment of the fan base after any poor result. But the cries after that Toronto debacle, and then the debacle that I think for several reasons we've touched on, that Colorado game, which is almost more disappointing. calls for Greg Berhalter, and you talk about taking a season over season approach, Ralph. And Alex, I'll throw this to you too. Do you guys think that Greg Berhalter, where do you see this team under Greg Berhalter's stewardship since 2014? Do you feel good about the direction that this club is going? Do you think that he's still the person to lead it? Keeping in mind that, you know, he is, if you're to take Greg Berhalter out of this picture, not just with the stuff that the senior team's done, but look at everything he's done to help build up this Crew SC program, really, especially with the investments in the youth academy.
You know, and I like everything about that. And, you know, you think about who came in before Greg. We had Robert Warhizeha. Was he okay? Not really, but it was more of a sentimental hire, I think. Look, Greg's great for the program. 2014, we surpassed expectations. We got into the playoffs. It was a little bit rough. We got throttled by New England at home. And then we have a questionable red card when Shuttlesworth takes down Finley. And, you know, long story short, we got to the playoffs when we weren't really supposed to. That was our first year under Greg Berhalter. 2015 comes around. Nobody really knows. We get this guy, Kai Kamara. You know, we don't know what we can do. We hear all this stuff. Is he washed up? Can he still play? What's his deal? You know, we see him at Norwich. He comes in, has a great season for us. And wouldn't you know it, we're number one in the East. You know, and we're going to be, or actually I think we were number two in the East. But, you know, we get into the Eastern Conference Final. You know, we're going against RBNY. And, you know, all of a sudden, wouldn't you know it, we're in the MLS Cup Final. If I look anybody, any Crew fan, Nordek, in the South Stands, anybody in the eyes, and I said, going back to 2015, did you think you were going to get in the MLS Cup Final? I know 2015 me would have said absolutely not, because there were times during that season that we played absolutely horrendous. I think there was a particular game that I can remember in 2015 that we played against Vancouver that I just did not feel good about. And I said, there's no way that we're going to do anything, and that was the middle of the summer. You know, so 2015 comes around, we get in the MLS Cup, it's great. Unfortunately, you know, we lost in the final. But then 2016 comes around, and everybody's assuming, hey, we got in the championship game, why can't we do it again? You know, and I think the players, unfortunately, kind of slept on that, and they thought, you know, there were a couple articles and a couple folks that said that maybe we were overrated. And I said, you know, maybe. But, you know, we had some injuries. We lost Gaston Saro twice during the year. Trapp was out for a considerable portion of the year. You know, and we obviously lost Kai because of disciplinary reasons, even though nobody really will say that. You know, so the team had a lot of adjusting to get into. And, you know, going into this year, the team, you know, maybe you guys can speak on this too. I felt like coming into this year, particularly being at the kickoff party at the Bluestone, feeling a lot of hope and a lot of rejuvenation, because, you know, we were finally getting the shackles off of 2016. You know, the supposed cursed season due to the four Columbus kits was over. You know, we've got these new players coming in. We've got this Zach Steffen who transferred in late last year. What's his deal? We've got a full season with Nico Ness, you know, and we're getting all these new players and these guys that we got in the super draft. Everybody was excited about Cronulli, Nico Hansen, Wallace Abubakar, you know, and there was a lot of excitement. And, you know, we come out kind of flat in the first game, don't really do well against Houston, and then everything picks up against DC United, and suddenly everybody's like, yeah, we got a chance. Then we beat Portland, then we beat Orlando, and, you know, when we beat Portland, it kind of felt like we exercised the demons of 2015 a little bit, because the team and the fans were, you know, celebrating like we just won MLS Cup. And it was the second or third match of the season. So, you know, with Berhalter, everybody needs to remember that this is the guy's second team that he's ever coached, ever. He was a player before this. He was at Hammarby, and then he comes here. This is the longest tenured gig that he's had. I still have full confidence in him. I think he's very much learning the ropes, you know, but he's trying to do things better, because as we saw in previous seasons, he was very stingy. You know, we get transfers like Emil Larson, or we get Amro Tarek, for the people that really want to look back in the history books for his one game that he's played with the team. You know, you get these guys and he touts these people, but then he doesn't trust them. He doesn't put them in. He stays with the veteran guys. And he's really said this year that he's, you know, as I alluded to earlier, really proud of the depth that he's got on this team. And these are his guys. You know, and not to mention the investments that he's made in the academy system and, you know, trying to get somebody like Ben Swanson, unfortunately, who's been injured. You know, I know Trapp was under the previous regime, but, you know, he's really making these tremendous strides and trying to find these younger players like an Artur, like a Christian Martinez, that really are going to be a benefit for this club long term. I think Greg's a great fit. I just think, you know, he's having growing pains right now as a coach, and eventually these will get alleviated. That's my spiel.
Yeah, I don't completely disagree with that. Although I'm kind of looking at it from a different perspective. The people who want Greg Berhalter to be fired almost universally want Guillermo Barrascalotto to take over. From what I've heard, Guillermo has no interest in returning to Columbus. His family does not want to live here again. And he's coaching the team of his dreams in Boca Juniors. He's got offers from other MLS teams, apparently. LAFC is apparently talking to him. But if it's true that he does not want to come back here, and I have no reason to doubt that, then I think fans are going to be disappointed no matter who we hire. And so I'm not sure what Anthony Precourt gains by firing Greg and blowing up the team that they've built over the last 3 years to hire somebody who the fans are going to be disappointed in anyway, just to make people feel better about this current stretch of form. We're still above the red line. It's not like we're in last place or anything like that. And I'm not sure you can justify firing him at this point. If you told me that you could go out and get Guillermo tomorrow and that he was going to be here and he was going to transform this team into a South American style MLS powerhouse, I'd probably be on board. I don't think that's realistic. And because of that, I don't think that there's any reason to fire Greg Berhalter. I agree with what Ralph said. I think he's a young coach and he's learning. I do think he's maybe learning slower than he should. But he is learning, and I'm okay with toughing it out with him. And especially because, I mean, this is the team that we have, and we're going to be with these players through the end of the season anyway. And we're like I said, we're still above the red line. I mean, we are not in playoff danger yet. And so if we can make it to the playoffs, and then we can check in the off season and see what the availability of other coaches are, and maybe they can rebuild. But we're stuck with the guys we've got. We're stuck with the system that we've got. And I think we should be stuck with the coach that we've got. I think that we can still turn this thing around, and I hope we do. But even if we don't, I think fans are going to be very disappointed with the people that we end up hiring if we were to fire Greg Berhalter.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I hate to do it, just, you know, for the sake of having an edgy, combative podcast. But I mean, Alex, I agree with every single point that you just made there. I mean, you can't just fire for the sake of firing. I think you can possibly get a little boost. You do typically, you know, get a bit of a reaction from players after a coach is fired, but you can't replace Greg Berhalter, a person who's worked meticulously to build this program and to get it where it is, where it might not be as great as some fans would like it to be, but then just expect to throw somebody else in and grab somebody else in there, or, you know, hand the keys over to Pat Onstad for the rest of the season, assume that he's going to turn it around or something like that. You need to have a replacement, and not just a replacement, but a plan in place. And because Greg Berhalter, for better or for worse, has his hands over so much on this team, I don't think you can remove him without a replacement and a real contingency in there, and you're trying to blame and not that Greg should be blame free, because he's certainly not, but you can't pin all the problems on one person. And again, if you're gonna look at it and say that, you know, the coach that took us to the Eastern Conference Finals in his first season, the MLS, and then had all of his players injured, traded away the Golden Boot scorer, which again, you know, you can argue, well, maybe Greg needed to do a better job of coaching up Kai or something like that. But I don't think any Crew SC fans would really trade Kai for Ola Kamara, an in-form Ola Kamara right now. That you're really going to say, I mean, how many other MLS coaches, when you look at how much turnover there is in this league, and how many teams, you know, struggle to even have any little bit of success. I mean, look at how bad Chicago's been. And now, of course, they're all right now. But that didn't happen overnight. And to think that just getting rid of Greg Berhalter is going to solve all the problems with this team. People are going to be grass is always greener, you know. And that's always going to be the case with a certain segment of any fan base. But I think you're being a little bit short-sighted to think that getting rid of Greg Berhalter is going to fix everything with this team.
Well, and one other quick thing. I mean, when you talk about the playoffs, I think that there are two things happening in the season. The losses that we've had have all been really demoralizing losses. I mean, for the most part, at least a lot of them have been. The last two definitely have been. But when you look at the standings, and I know people will say, oh, well, you have games in hand, things like that. When you look at points per game, which just eliminates all the extra games and games in hand, all that stuff, we are still in the playoffs when you look at points per game. And the tiebreaker, if, say, another team can catch us in points per game, the tiebreaker is number of wins in a season. And so because we've had the season where we've either won or we've lost pretty much, that is in our favor as well. So we're not in a terrible position, but we definitely can't continue the way the last week has gone. I mean, if we had a really bad week, two out of those three games were terrible. And we can't keep having weeks like that, but I don't see why we would in a lot of cases. I don't see why we would any more than why we would any other specific week from any other part of the season. I think we can turn this thing around. I think we will, and I think we'll be fine. But definitely not the best week that we've ever had, and I totally understand why fans would be upset. I'm upset too.
You know, and kind of in closing, to move on from this, you know, everybody needs to sit back, kind of take a chill pill about this. You know, if you fire Greg Berhalter right now, like we were saying, for this contingency plan, you could do potentially devastating effects to the team for probably a good while. Because, you know, people are probably going to want to leave. They're going to, you know, guys that are really particularly attached to him are going to say, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not really good for this regime. And maybe the youth academy is going to kind of not really have the direction that it has. You know, Mohamed Saeed, player that's absolutely beloved here, even, you know, that we just saw against Colorado, said something to the effect that, you know, he really respected Greg and said he's a very, very good tactically sharp guy, you know, and that you, if you understood everything that he does behind the scenes, you would see why he is the way that he is, you know. So you can't fire him, because it's going to do considerably more harm than good.
I agree there, certainly. And it'll be, and that doesn't, I think just because we're all still, you know, hashtag Team Berhalter, doesn't mean that, again, that we're just happy with everything he's done and that he doesn't need to make changes. But I think it comes down to also just a lot of the things that people have talked about with this team, when the new ownership, when Tony Precourt came in and bringing in Greg Berhalter, that air of professionalism, the way that it's the team had kind of gone in a new direction, getting its act together, a bit more professional, again, investing in the youth academy, and the idea of just, again, pulling the plug mid-season with no other contingency plan in place. Flies in the face of everything that you talk about loving about the Tony Precourt regime. So I think while it's certainly concerning, and you know if he follows this up with five straight losses by 5-0 margin or conceding goals in the final 10 minutes each time, but I think the guy deserves to at least finish out the season. At the very least, and then you evaluate it as you always do. Looking though, moving forward, so obviously a little bit of downtime for Crew SC, although we do have the big FC Cincinnati Ohio Derby. Boy, I really hate when people say Derby is Derby. They're not English.
People calling it a different thing too.
Yeah. Oh, something. What would that be?
Can we swear? I don't know.
Sam's not here. You are in control.
I have the keys. I just realized that. The Hell is Real Derby is some of the supporters are calling it, if I'm not mistaken.
The big sign on 71. So we got Cincinnati coming up next week. I think we'll probably want to devote a good amount of time in that show to cover it, previewing that massive clash of the Titans.
All of Falcao's 7 goals that he's going to score in an Open Cup play.
Oh yeah, and but for the fact that we don't want to deny you, our loyal listeners, the chance to hear Patrick Murphy rail on Cincinnati. So we'll kind of, just give you that little teaser, that thought to kind of stave you over for the next week. But instead, we'll jump way ahead to a kind of special game coming up on June 24th. So actually a couple games away at Cruz Stadium. And Ralph, I know kind of not really downtime, but you've also been covering some of the other soccer around Central Ohio, specifically the Columbus Eagles, the women's team here in Columbus. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about what that's been like and what we've got looking forward to during that Montreal game on the 24th?
Yeah, great. Bart, can I just put you in my pocket and have you be my hype man for the rest of my life? That's a great
I don't know if I'll fit there, buddy, but we'll see.
Wear a size 40 pant. You'll be all right, man. I got childbearing hips. It's fine. Anyway, I have the keys. I can say that. I've been privileged enough to be welcomed in by the Columbus Eagles team. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with this, and maybe we can have Alex talk about it because he was a season ticket holder in their inaugural season. But the Columbus Eagles are a WPSL, a Women's Premier Soccer League affiliate that is located here in Columbus, Ohio. They play their home games at Otterbein, although they just wrapped up their home schedule, but with the exception of 2 games, which I'll touch on here in a second. But head coach Mark Wise, who is also the team owner, has welcomed me with open arms with the organization. And there's a very special deal for you guys here. And you guys are going to be able to watch great quality soccer. They are, I believe, I'm looking at the top of the they're still top of the table in their division right now. So they've got 6 points right now with a record of 2-1. With a really stout defense, they're doing wonderful things at this program. But so kind of a quick promo for you guys is on June 24th, that's going to be that's the next home game, right? Because we have Atlanta next week. Yeah, absolutely. So June 24th, before the Montreal Impact game, there's a pretty neat thing that you can take advantage of. At 2 o'clock, the Columbus Eagles are going to play Cincinnati Sirens Football Club on the pitch at Moffray Stadium. Now, you may be wondering to yourself, how much is this going to cost you? Great question. if you are a Crew SC season ticket member, okay, so I'm talking to the season ticket members right now, you get into the game free of charge. There is nothing stopping you from coming into that game. You can walk in and say, I want to see the Eagles play some football, and there you go. Now, if you are not a Crew SC season ticket member, but you're like, hey, I like me some soccer, you can come on out to Moffray Stadium. You can get a $30 ticket, which will get you into the Columbus Eagles game, a post-match tailgate where you can hang out, meet the players, talk to the staff, talk to fellow soccer lovers, presumably Crew fans. And then, for the cherry on top, you will be able to attend to the Montreal Impact game later that night, and you can see the Fighting Ignacio Piattis as they come into town, into the Tiny Demon Fortress. And hopefully, maybe we might get lucky and get a Gangster Crew baby appearance again. But, you know, so to get realistic with you guys, though, this team is great. They're led by a goalkeeper in Shawnee Kirkhoff, who is a Westerville, Ohio native. So very easy to root for her. She was Division I at Temple. There's a couple local gals here. Monique Hanike is a former forward at Capital, if you guys follow OAC action at all or anything like that, who was converted to center back. There's a player that's won the U.S. Open Cup in Corey Miller. And, or Corey Moore, I always mess her last name up, and if she's listening, she's going to kill me for this. And there's a lot of local talent, you know, that's available here regionally, and some of these guys, the teams that they played, like the Dayton Dutch Lions, had Rose Lavelle, who was the top pick for the Boston Breakers in the NWSL. So this is great quality soccer, guys. It's second division of the NWSL. You guys really need to come out. You know, it'd be really cool if we get the Nordica kind of like a pre... you know, kind of warm your pipes up for the boys when they take the pitch at 7. But, you know, it's a free game. You really have nothing to lose. Come on out, you know, see this team, learn about them. They're very great. They're interactive, and they definitely would be appreciative.
I guess I can talk a little bit about this. As a season ticket holder for the Eagles in the past, they are fantastic. It's a great organization, and it's great to have women's soccer in Columbus, Ohio, and you should definitely come out and support them, especially since you can do it for free. But you know, for me as somebody who grew up with soccer, you know, 1996, 1997, having the Columbus Crew being in town while I was a kid growing up playing soccer was just amazing. You know, you got to look up to these guys and idolize them in a lot of ways and follow the team. And I think for young girls, a lot of times it's harder because you do just have these kind of male teams. And so women's soccer is something that I think is really important. So both genders can have somebody that they can really kind of look up to and strive to be like and have these positive role models. And the Columbus Eagles are that in a lot of ways. They're talented. It's pretty high quality stuff. First season was a little bit rocky, but they sorted it out after that, and it's been great. And I would highly recommend that people go out and try it at this game. And if you like it, I mean, go to other games because they seem to be around for the long haul now. And we're lucky to have them. And if you like soccer in this community and you want to support both teams, you should definitely do so.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys can, you know, it's kind of funny if you want to think of it like a gym membership. You know, you literally pay nothing, and you can, you know, figure out if this is something for you, and, you know, maybe buy yourself some sunglasses or, you know, get you a season ticket membership, guys. It's only $25 for the season. It's fantastic. It's a great offer. So head on over to Columbus Eagles FC and get yourself some tickets, or if you guys want to tweet at me, we can make something happen. I can get you in touch with who you need to get in touch with.
Man, that sounds like me getting a gym membership in that I go there, do nothing, and buy a pair of sunglasses and think I'm okay for it. But jokes aside, I'm psyched about it. I'm gonna try to I'm usually there for the tailgate pretty early on, so might see if I can get back out, you know, get it back out for our tailgate afterwards. But in the game.
You can't
but,
go in and out, you know, too, Bart. That is one thing I need to say. You can't go in and out.
That...
And they're going to have a bigger stand open, a concession stand open, so you can drink during the game.
Well, I don't touch any of that strong stuff, but for those of you that are inclined, you heard it from Ralph here, who is also trying to take over as the group sales rep for Columbus Crew SC or the Eagles, maybe both. We're definitely psyched about that, and I do think, I mean, you just look at the. I'll tell you what, I'd almost rather watch, I mean, for a number of reasons, mostly because I like watching America win, and so I prefer watching U.S. women's national team games than the men's team, because they just kick so much butt, and so definitely it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, check off, do you like soccer? Do you like cheering for the city of Columbus? If you answered yes to either of those questions, you should be going out there and supporting the Eagles. And again, what's that website, Ralph?
You can find that at www.columbus, hopefully you know how to spell that, eaglesfc.com.
Well, and one quick thing. They're also on Twitter, and it's at Columbus Eagles, all one word. So you should follow them, because they, even if you can't make it out to a match, you can kind of keep up with the season, stuff like that. And then they usually tweet out reminders of when their next home game is, things like that. So it's a good thing.
Or you can follow Massive Report, too, because I'm on the beat, too.
That also works.
Go follow them, too. They need they need some love.
Absolutely. So, again, officially friends of the show now, Columbus Eagles FC. Give them a follow. Come up, come down for the game on June 24th to catch that. And you know, maybe we'll see if any of them want to be on the show, or we can do like a live recording or something that day. I don't know. Will you still have the keys, Ralph?
I mean, I've got the keys, unless Sam changes the password.
Yeah, and this show is actually the lost episode that never really got out, because Sam's going to hear this and be like, nope. No,
he's
but
probably going to look at it, because it's going to be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when we're all in bed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to probably look at this and go, nope, we're not putting this out.
Yep, denied. So if you heard this before he pulled the plug, good for you. I think, fellas, though, on that note... that should about wrap things up. Any other parting thoughts before we call it an evening?
I'm just upset that Sam is not here and I didn't get a chance to work in a single Falcao reference, because he can't mute me from...
Got him.
God, did you guys work? You guys did. You didn't work that out over Slack or anything. Like, that, no. That wasn't... like. Ladies and gentlemen, that was 100% organic. That was wonderful, fellas. Like, we rehearsed most of these bits. You can tell, because it all rolls off so smoothly. But that one was completely organic.
Alex, go ahead. You know it's my favorite part of the show.
I'm done. That was all I had. I'm not going to work in any references, but I appreciate that you muted me, as is tradition.
We got to
pass the torch a little bit. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
It was for job security, nothing else.
All right. Well, Ralph, thank you, sir, for keeping the car running, at least it seems to be.
I think there's a dent on the front fender somewhere, but we can buff that out.
Yep, just don't tell Sam. And that should do it again for this week. Bye, buddies.